Welcome to the Painting of the Week podcast, where we look at some of the most significant paintings throughout history. Introducing your hosts, Phil Grabsky and Laura Bentham.
Well, hello, and welcome to Painting of the Week. Obviously, with myself and Laura. We've chosen a superb painting this week, El Jaleo, by John Singer Sargent. Either go to the 7th-art.com website, go to podcast and pull up the picture, or maybe you're seeing this on YouTube where the picture will be with you the whole time that you're listening to our chat. Well, let's kick off straight away. Laura, what do you think of... I mean, let's be honest, it's a spectacular painting, isn't it? Tell me, what do you think?
I think that sometimes I am the luckiest person alive because you say to me, Laura, we're going to do a painting, or we look at a painting, and somehow my life has changed so much that I'm spending 2 hours sometimes looking at a painting never looked at before in my life. And then I'm like, this is something. And I'm trying to see all your diagonals and triangles and all that stuff. And all I can see is just this amazing painting with just the most incredible atmosphere. I've looked at how it works or tried to. And I totally love this. I can definitely say I would stand for a while and look at this painting. Yeah.
You're running out of space on your walls, aren't you, to put copies of the pictures we talk about?
There's a couple I might have missed. This one, 100%.
Do you know, I went into a gallery yesterday in Brighton because, long story, but somebody before COVID very kindly gave me a voucher.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's a bit more complicated than that. My son got a voucher and he sold it to me because he wanted the money instead.
That's brilliant.
It's only for like £100 or something. But I keep going into this gallery in Brighton and they've got 50, 60, 70 paintings on the wall and I never see one that I want.
Right, okay.
And yet, you see this and you think, yep, definitely.
100%, yeah.
And in fact, if we talk more broadly about John Singer Sargent, there's a lot of his artworks that 100%... bang, straight on the living room wall.
Yeah.
I think this is spectacular. And so John Singer Sargent, for those who don't know, is a tremendous, and is it fair to say slightly overlooked? Maybe slightly overlooked artist.
I've got a question for you later on that one.
Okay.
He's overlooked.
I mean, we haven't done a film on John Singer Sargent for exhibition on screen, and we're now, you know, into our mid-30s for the amount of films that we've made. Although I must say we are thinking about it, and have been for a while. There's a very good new biography out about him, which I've just ordered. Anyway, I was in Washington a few months ago and went to see a couple of exhibitions at the National Gallery of Art. I went because there was an exhibition there about one of their Vermeer paintings, but they also had Sargent in Spain on, and it was tremendous. And that's when I came back to the office and said, we've really got to think about Sargent. I think, if I remember correctly, he in about 1879, he went for 5 months, travelled through Spain, maybe North Africa as well, and just did some fantastic paintings. Remind me the date of this one. This is afterwards. Yeah, so this was inspired by 1882.
82, yeah.
Yeah. So this is inspired by his trip to Spain. Somebody yesterday asked me actually to name my three favourite countries that I visited. Impossible question. But actually one of them I ultimately answered was Spain. It's the most fantastic country. And my wife and I spent quite a lot of time in the south. And so this is very evocative for someone who's been to Spain, but it's evocative anyway. A Carmen, that fantastic opera.
Yes.
He'd never been to Spain, but he still was able to create, you know, a fantastic opera set in the tobacco factory in Sevilla. Anyway, the picture.
Yes.
Now, I know you've done...
I've done much on Sargent this week. I got too busy with the picture. So I just love it so much.
So what are you seeing in there that you love so much?
Just that it's that 100% atmosphere.
Yeah.
I can hear the music. You can start to the left of the painting and it feels like it's running right through to the end. And that wonderful woman at the end who slightly makes me giggle.
Yeah.
I don't know if it does anybody else. But she's just fabulous. But I don't know.
It's an interesting perspective though, isn't it? Because she almost seems too small.
Yeah.
Maybe she's a kid.
But also, okay.
I don't know.
Well, that might make sense because I thought I'm really going to be good on this one, Phil, and I'm going to know my thing. And I really looked at all the faces because obviously he was known for his portrait painting.
Mm.
Well, okay, the dancer, and she's amazing. But when I got to the little girl at the end, or now you're saying little girl potentially.
Maybe, yeah.
I thought, I don't know if that was... It kind of, when you look really closely at her face, it was a bit like, okay, I'm done now.
Yeah.
I'm off. It didn't feel that he'd really gone for it, but the rest of it, I just love it so much because of that. It's almost quite quaint. It's like, okay, it's such a great painting. There we are.
I have read that he spent about a year preparing for this.
Mm.
I mean, those kind of facts are always a bit misleading. I mean, you may have been on and off it and doing other stuff and coming, you know.
Well, exactly.
But still, but actually, apparently, it only took him a few days to paint.
It's mainly black and white.
It's quite monochromatic, isn't it?
Mm. And then there's those touches.
The touches are inspired. So on the left-hand side, you've got, if you look carefully, folks, you've got two tiny little... lines of red on the second man from the left's jacket. And then you've got a single orange, obviously representing, you know, the orange trees of Sevilla. Although actually, El Jaleo is actually more associated with Jerez, which is to the west of Sevilla. Jerez is famous for its sherry, famous for its white horses. But the whole part of southern Spain, you know, famous for its oranges.
That is actually quite funny, then. It's just one orange.
So the guy's not there. Maybe that's the guy who's standing up. No, he must be sitting down, or he'd be quite short. So it's just an empty chair with an orange.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some fantastic variation in the guitarists. One guy's stopped on the left. He's just got his hand on his guitar. The other guy is clapping. Then you've got the orange, not doing very much. You've got two guitarists and you could actually work out the chords that they're playing. And you can tell, just look at their fingers, you can tell they're doing that kind of strumming with two fingers. Beautiful. Guy asleep.
Oh, is he asleep?
Yeah.
But I thought that he was just...
Oh, is he singing?
Loving every minute of it. actually thought that could be me.
Well,
I pinpointed myself as him to the point of how much I love music, and then with my arms in the air at the end.
Do you know what? I reckon, actually, I take it back. I think he's singing.
Yeah. I don't think you could sleep through his painting.
No, no. I made my first series I ever made was about Spain.
Right.
Called Spain in the Shadow of the Sun, and... one of the things, I mean, it was great because I spent 3 years and we learned the language and it did it really properly. And I listened to a lot of traditional Spanish music and absolutely loved it. And the singing, these old guys singing, is just fantastic. Anyway, then you got the dancer, absolutely brilliant. I mean, just everything about it. I'm sure that a flamenco dancer would recognise the position of the fingers and the head and the back and the legs, and you can, if you look carefully at her shoes, they'll be click clacketing away. Laura, slightly interfered with this painting by the fact that your screen is cracked. How do you do that?
Do you really want to know?
Did you headbutt it?
No, my conservatory window completely shattered one day in the heat and landed on my screen, and luckily I darted away.
No.
So, yeah.
Oh, Christ. Has that been there before then?
It's been there for years.
Oh, actually, you normally use my computer, don't you?
Yeah. Sorry about that, everyone. Slight technical issue. If Phil could see my, everyone see my life.
Oh dear. Anyway, then we've got the three. See, another guy, and then two dancers, and then you got that again. The use of red. So, just as you've said, it is the most fantastic painting for that. Not only controlling your eye, but just it's so musical.
It is.
This rhythm, these five, I mean, it's obviously thought through. This rhythm, these five guys, bang, 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 bang. So you've got that rhythm going on.
Yeah.
You can, the guitarist, probably the guy singing. Clickety-click, clickety-clack, snapping of the fingers. She's probably got castanets. I'm sure she's got castanets in the left hand.
Yeah.
And then you've got a couple of dancers, and then they, you know, she's looking, they're both looking to picture left, and that throws your eyes right back, so you go backwards and forwards.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's fantastic. And then even just to make sure that there's, you know, the wall isn't, there's all these odd shadows, yeah. And got two guitars, one slightly more sketched than the other, but even that's quite clever
because
you start with the one on the left slightly sketchy, but your eye goes to the one on the right because it's more defined. So again, your eyes just, if those two guitars were exactly the same, you'd be a bit stuck there.
Mm.
This way, you're kind of driven. Your eye moves left to right because your eye automatically goes to something a bit more focused.
I went even further with those guitars in my head.
Yeah.
I started to think the one on the left was representing sort of, would that be great-grandpa's guitar? So they put that one up. It's unplayable.
Yeah. And
so, because that guy's hand is pointing up to it, is it representing? And maybe that's why there's the empty seat with the orange.
Yeah,
I've gone really crazy.
No, maybe.
But this is
somebody
this
missing.
Is where I am now in a different league now. I've got my head with these paintings. But
his use of light here.
Yeah.
Look at the floorboards. It'd be so easy to have the floorboards all the same colour, but no, this, you've got this light at the front goes into the darkness, you don't see the guy's feet, a couple of little dots of white. And then the wall makes really very little sense. I mean, if you're trying to find a light source, I mean, it seems to be coming from bottom right.
Mm.
Or even maybe where we are a little bit, but low down.
So what light would it be?
What light would it be? I mean, it's not, it's not supposed to be firelight.
No.
Who knows?
No, it is just so fun. It's got everything, atmosphere. I can hear the music, which is, well, what a painting. I'm assuming if it's about music and dancing, what it should do.
Do you think that we're supposed to imagine that we're in an audience of some sort, that this is a performance for us, or do you think it's more personal than that? This is, they're performing for themselves and we're just a... an absent observer.
No, I think performing for themselves.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't be, they'd be more focused on the audience at the end.
Yeah.
And they're just so passionate about what they're doing. It's all, yeah. I think it's more for them.
Yeah, because nobody's looking at us. Or,
nobody.
Yeah.
They're all just having fun. And just, if you want to enjoy it as well, you're more than welcome to stay.
Yeah.
And if you don't, off you go. But, yeah, what a wonderful, brilliant, fun painting.
So what do you know about Singer Sargent? I mean, how old was he when he painted
this? Yeah, I was 25 when he painted this. And there was my questioning.
Yeah.
Because he painted this in 1882. And then he only became... Well, I think most of the reason people noticed him was because of this whole drama that happened in 1884 with this painting that he put into the Paris Salon.
Yeah.
Which caused a stir, to be fair, when I've looked at the painting, which is the, what I know it as Madame X.
Yeah.
But I couldn't quite work out what the drama was about.
Well.
Come on, Phil.
So, Singer Sargent. Born in Florence, 1856, American parents, and studies in Italy, obviously, born there, Germany, Paris, and his tutor was inspired by Velázquez. So again, there's a Spanish influence there. That's probably what drove him to go and visit Spain. So if he's going in 1879, he's what? He's only 23. Mm. Funnily enough, that's exactly when I went. I was 23.
What, to Spain?
Yeah.
Oh.
Very prolific. A lot of his work is in the MFA, Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. So he goes to Spain, does this painting, which is pretty successful, if I remember correctly. I think it is. It does get accepted into the Salon. And remember, you know, we've talked about this in other podcasts.
Mm.
Plenty of our Impressionist heroes and heroines are having their works rejected. Manet and Cassatt and all the rest of them, but his gets in, even though it is, you know, impressionistic in a sense. But in 1884, he paints, as you say, Madame X, and I mean, you know, as I understand it, it was partly so shocking to people because she's got these two straps. I mean, even at this time, showing kind of naked shoulders was something.
Right, okay.
And I know in the Mary Cassatt film, we talked about that with Mary painting her sister in the theatre, again with naked shoulders and then the mirror showing her naked back. Still pretty provocative at the time. I mean, you know, Manet's painting a naked woman at a picnic, so, you know, the boundaries are being pushed. But Singer Sargent initially, if I understand this story correctly, had one of the straps down on her arm. And he was actually kind of forced. If you look at the painting now, the strap's gone back up. Mm. But he was kind of forced to do that.
And that was the drama.
I think that's part of the drama. I think just the nature, you know, the dress is very sultry. She's very sultry. For him, I think it was probably his favourite work.
Yeah.
But others considered it too provocative and actually forced him to go to England.
But he got everyone talking about him.
Got everyone talking about him. And, you know, over the next few years in England, he became the, perhaps, leading portrait painter.
Yeah.
Plenty of women in their finery. But it's quite interesting. So women would commission him, or their husbands maybe would commission him to do their wives or the painting, and they'd come with a particular dress that they wanted to be painted in. He said, no, you're not wearing that, wear this.
Okay.
He was very particular. He himself was never married. Lots of talk about him being homosexual, or, you know, who cares really.
Yeah.
But he obviously was fascinated by the female form and fashion. And, you know, I think he, in his lifetime, is something like 900 oil paintings. That's really, you know, we've just done this, as you know, Vermeer, the greatest exhibition. Probably Vermeer in his whole lifetime does about 42 paintings.
Yeah.
And his Sargent doing 900, plus about 2,000 or 2,000 few hundred watercolours.
It's funny how I mean, it's even now in the art world, if you have some drama or something, you do something wrong, you upset somebody, then people then start looking at your art. There's always going to be an opinion. And, yeah, makes it, you either benefit from it then or you don't. But because there has been the drama, does that necessarily make some painting, some artists... Does that make them?
You see, I think not. But I think an awful lot of emphasis in the last X decade has been on, you know, artists have very calculatedly created a sense of their personality.
Yeah.
Which tends to be usually a kind of rough end of things, you know, drinking and drug taking and...
Yeah, yeah.
Carousing, but... or talking openly about their sex lives or their, you know, whatever it might be. So they're a a character, a personality.
Yeah, okay.
And then if you get an artwork by X,
mm-hmm.
it has that added cachet.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say Tracy Emin, for example, I know that at some event she was just basically doodling
yeah.
on pieces of paper at £1,000 a time.
Right, okay, yeah.
But it was a doodle by Tracy Emin.
Yeah.
I went to an exhibition of hers where she'd basically turned out the contents of her desk drawer
mm.
into a display cabinet, and that was the artwork. But because it's the desk drawer of Tracy Emin,
yeah,
it held an interest for people.
I've got a load of other stuff that I could do, so if anyone wants some.
We all, yeah, but if I was to pour out my stuff, who would be interested? And with respect, your stuff. So that's
it is good.
But
that
I
is interesting.
But I think, you know, Damien Hirst did an exhibition of his paintings, and
mm.
I think he thought because it was the paintings of Damien Hirst, they would be respected and treated fairly, or in his view, fairly. But actually, they were highly criticised. People said he just couldn't paint.
Right. Yeah.
So. I think the personality of the artist, it's like some of the greatest paintings or the most popular paintings are that way because they were stolen.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Mona Lisa is not, in my opinion, Leonardo's best work, but it was stolen, so it had this cachet, this repute. Same with The Scream. I don't think that's Munch's best work, but he did four versions of The Scream. Two of them were stolen, so people know about this painting.
Because that's what I was thinking about Caravaggio. As well, he had such a colourful life.
Yeah.
Obviously died quite young as well. That sort of makes everybody then suddenly, although to be fair, his painting's incredible.
You can't really
say he's not good at painting.
I mean, we know very little about Vermeer, but he's still probably, I mean, just judging by the reaction to our film, I mean, I used to say Van Gogh was the most popular artist in the world. I wonder if it's Vermeer.
Mm.
I mean, we know very little about him, really. I mean, obviously a lot of his personality is reflected in the paintings.
Yeah.
The danger is that if you know a lot about the character of somebody, then you start to read into the paintings.
Oh, I think that's for sure.
You know, so if...
And then you start making things up.
So, you know, if this painting was done by Hemingway, you'd think for sure he's lusting after the dancer.
Mm.
Singer Sargent, if he was homosexual, isn't.
No.
We assume. So, mm-hmm. But then, you know, those kind of things you can obviously get wrong.
It just interested me that because of the scandal that happened with him a few years later, and then had that not happened, would we not even be sitting here looking at that lovely painting today? Would we just have overlooked that ourselves? It's interesting.
I think that I don't think it was such a big scandal.
Okay.
I don't think it was such a big deal. I think his paintings stand for themselves. But although he's a big name in America, I get asked when I go to do screenings in America, pretty often people say, when are you going to do a film about Sargent? Probably a little less so elsewhere do I get asked that question. This painting, incidentally, is in not at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, but at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, which is, unfortunately, the museum that the Vermeer was stolen from and never found. But
have you been to that museum?
Do you know what? I never have, no.
It looks lovely.
I should.
It looks beautiful.
Isabella Stewart Gardner actually built a gallery just for this painting in 1914 when she borrowed it. And the owner then... thought so highly of the fact that she'd done that he actually gave it to her.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Oh, yeah. I love that. I want to see if I can borrow.
I know you should
start borrowing.
Borrow a painting, build a nice extension.
Yeah. Have a quick word. The Tate.
It is, it is definitely one of those paintings that you could just sit and enjoy.
Mm.
And,
yeah.
You know, there are some paintings where you don't really feel that. You think, okay, I get that, and move on. Mm. But this one is like, there's so much to it, and there's so much personality.
I really, really love it. And I love the fact that you can hear it.
Yeah.
That is where I've been going with this one.
But look at that. Just look at that. I mean, look at some of the details just before we finish. But the chair.
Mm.
It's so well. I mean, there's no way on this earth I could paint that chair. I mean, it's so well done. Totally realistic.
Yeah.
And then the guitar on the right almost looks like it's made out of burnished gold. It's just brilliant with just a touch of a shadow.
Everything. I mean, her dress and her shoe.
And her little shoe. Clickety-clack.
I love shoes. And actually, that girl at the end, little if she is young, her dress as well.
Yeah.
The way those pieces of fabric look sort of splashed
they
on.
They must be kids learning, mustn't they?
Yeah, now you've said it. Because I must admit, as I was looking, I thought, I'm not sure about that girl's
so you know, fashion. You know with flamenco, you have to pluck, what do they say in Spanish? Coge la naranja y se pone en what's the pocket? Anyway, you pluck the orange from the tree up here and you put it in your back pocket.
Right. I did a couple of flamenco dancing lessons years and years ago.
Very good.
I don't remember that, Phil. It was fun, though. It was one of those, let's go to the flamenco dancing class.
It definitely makes you want to get on a plane and go to Sevilla.
Oh, 100%.
Or, sorry, Jerez.
Yes.
The only problem for me with Jerez is I actually tried a glass of Jerez sherry.
And?
Yeah, it wasn't quite to my taste, but I'm sure it's very nice.
What, really sweet?
I don't need to offend anybody.
No.
Actually, the worst mistake ever made in Spanish was on my very first trip. We'd driven all the way from London all the way down to Malaga, and I'd learnt a bit of Spanish, and I made two mistakes along the way.
No.
One of them I always thought I was going to use as a title of an autobiography because we stopped at this little cafe on this little road going through Spain. Most beautiful country in the world. Anyway, and that's not true. One of the most beautiful. Stopped at this cafe, ordered a salad, and then there was a young girl serving us, and as she walked away, I wanted to ask her, have you any chips, being British? What I actually said to her was, I said, habla patatas. And she giggled, went into the cafe, and then like, a couple of other faces came and looked out the door at us, giggling, because what I'd actually said to her is, do you speak potato? And I thought, what a great title for an autobiography, do you speak potato? But it got worse.
Oh, no.
Because I then got to the South Coast, and we went out for dinner, maybe that night, maybe the next night, and I ordered a glass. I knew what wine was. It was vino. So I ordered a big glass of vino.
Yeah.
But I must have said something that to this waiter's ears sounded like fino. So he brought me a big glass of fino. And anyone who knows what fino is will know what's about to happen. Fino is dry, almost sour sherry.
Oh.
And I took a big glug of this stuff.
Oh, no.
And I can taste it to this day. So it's not enough to learn the spelling. You've got to learn the pronunciation.
Yeah.
I did then learn Spanish better.
Okay, good.
Although my English then wasn't very good, was it? I learned it better.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, don't worry, obviously.
So, John Singer Sargent.
Yes.
Master. Great painter. This is a great painting. Enjoy it and have a look at his other paintings, not least Madame X from 1884. His paintings in Spain, I think, are tremendous. And we'll see you again soon.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Painting of the Week podcast. For more information, please visit our website at seventh-art.com or contact us by emailing info@seventh-art.com. See you next time.